CliffCentral.com.
All right. Hello. Hello and welcome to Thursday, the 17th of October.
Okay. Testing in the wind. Testing in the
what
wind.
The hell?
It's going to be a little too loud.
Sorry. There you go.
I don't know.
You know what my biggest problem ever hosting the show is? That whenever I play audio off my laptop, it goes to the next thing every time.
Oh.
I've not noticed. It's my Achilles heel.
It's not porn, which is a good thing.
Yeah, but then iTunes just stores all kinds of things. There I was testing a microphone outside. Yeah, that's the life that I live. Anyway.
Testing.
Testing in the wind. Is this going to work? If I talk to someone like this, will it sound amateurish? Leanne, would you turn the aircon on there, please?
Oh, yeah, it's quite stuffy in here.
It is a
and the
stuffy.
Sun's up early these days.
Oh, it's a glorious sight. It really is. And as you know, I left Cliff Central in June, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a long time ago.
It was when it was very dark.
Life moves on. And it is nice to be here, but I sure as hell realized why it was one of the reasons why I have moved on is that these days are just too long.
Sure.
They're just too long, Leanne.
Just too long.
And then, like, I had an event last night that I was doing some filming at, and then I had a couple of beers, and then I woke up.
And then you had to wake up at 4?
No, I had to wake up at 1:45 with Meowsers puking on the bed.
Oh.
Which broke a lovely sleep cycle, I must add, Gugu. Anyway.
How's the sleep cycling coming along, Ben?
Well, I'm trying. So Gugu told me about...
Oh, did you do time... What's it called?
Sleepy time.
Tried it, yeah.
How's it working?
It's just at the moment, I'm not falling asleep as quickly as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the website thing you sent, it says on average humans 14. Fall asleep in 14 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm trying. So
yeah, you got to get in bed like, you know, 14 minutes prior.
So Tuesday, because that's your big day yesterday, Tuesday I went to bed early. I went to bed like 9:30. And I felt so good about it. I really did. Then I woke up at 4 because I still had like other work to do before I can go to these shoots. And yeah, I just feel knackered, huh? You get up and you're like,
why am I doing this?
Just two more days. Like, why am I doing this? Just two more days. Like, obviously, I love this place. Cliff Central is always part of who I am, and I said as much when I left. And the fact that Gareth and Sia are away, I mean, it obviously strained on the resources. So Gareth was, well, as you know, he's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I don't have one of those Apple dongle things. I changed back to iPhone. You know, you plug the thing in, you put the AUX cable in.
We do have one over there in the corner.
That's a bit AUX.
Jeez, how's that going? Look at that. The thing I was looking for in life, which I didn't think I would have, was actually 30 centimeters away from me.
Oh no, Ben, what is that?
Shut up. My laptop will not stop.
We're living Ben's life.
Trust me, the things I record nowadays, it's like endless. Things are coming. Okay, so our dear leader, Gareth Cliff, you know, is in New York, and we had scheduled some time to talk to him this morning.
I don't know, Judah. As far as I know, we're supposed to be talking to him this morning. What's happening?
Well, I got a message.
Hey, Ben, and hey, everybody. I'm sorry that this is a voice note instead of a live crossing. Had a long day today. It was very, very busy. We're at the NAB show in Manhattan. Went through to a meeting at Luminary. They're one of the big podcast providers and communicators and creatives in America. And we've had an insanely busy couple of days, so it's been really, really good. You meet so many interesting people here, and I know that I'm going to come back with plenty of good stories. Sia is mostly behaving. He can update you through his own social media, but we're looking forward to being back next week and updating you. I know you've got the Burning Platform today with Canthan, and plenty of other good stuff, I'm sure. We'll catch up soon.
So, you know, we've had a long day, Cliff. I did. Leanne did. Gugu did.
We did too.
And yet we're here, Cliff.
Hashtag me too.
Hashtag.
You know these people that run shit think they can just do what they want.
Oh, and look at this. Look at this. I now get a message from Sia Bonga Sangweni.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah?
Let's have a look at this. What's he got to say?
What's the time there for
them? I'm standing by listening if you'd like to call. Don't know, Gareth told me.
Maybe let's speak to Sia. Let me get Sia a buzz.
Because Sia cares.
Yeah, Sia cares. He values his job
Hashtag
and what
Sia
he does
cares.
Here.
Go, get
let
Sia.
Let me get Sia.
But it's not about valuing your job. I'm here because I value the listener. I've got a job. I'm here because this show
Ben,
must
stopping,
go on.
I have to stop you there. Stop being so bloody righteous.
Leanne, I will be as righteous as I want. The sun is rising to my left. We've got a full day ahead, and it's nice to be here. We have a whole bunch of messages already. I am, again, like I said to you on Tuesday, I'm blown away by the interaction on the show. Ben, try reading a bit before sleep. I find it helps. Good point. Actually, I did try Monday and Tuesday night, I read before sleeping. It did definitely help. I'm reading a really great book at the moment. Well, trying to. I read terribly slowly. I've got like attention deficit disorder when it comes to books. I'll start a book, I'll love it, then I'll just leave it for 6 months. The Joey Evans story. Joey Evans is a hard enduro motorcycle guy, everything on two wheels, basically. And he was on, Gareth interviewed him a few years back, and he got paralyzed and then somehow taught himself to walk again, obviously with the help of professionals, and then he did the Dakar Rally.
Wow.
And I met him this year. I interviewed him for this video series that I'm making around Kirsten Luttmann. What an incredible guy.
That frustration must have been off the charts.
I don't want to spoil anything in the book because you really must read this guy's book. But after the paralysis, he had another really big accident.
Oh, no.
And he goes into quite a lot of detail about
from motorsports again.
Yeah, I had to get, well, it's in his blood. And some things you just can't. You just can't deny.
Just the mum in me is saying, but I told you so.
Yeah. But thankfully for him, that the wife in his life said, this is who you are. Go and do this because you're grumpy if you don't do this. Mm. And anyway, he's a success story now. Spoiler alert, it goes well for him.
Well, you've now given us, in between spoiler alerts, the whole book.
Sort of. But it's the detail that he goes into, like what happened to him. I mean, like the daily function of trying to number two. When you really can't.
Sure.
That's how bad his injuries were. And I'll leave it at that. Gugu, how are we looking with Sia?
Sia's still organizing himself and, I don't know, maybe warming up his voice.
He's probably putting on moisturizer.
Yeah,
lip
that
balm.
Kind of stuff. But I am chatting to him. He's like, give me a second. Still sorting myself out.
Sia went to the Wendy Williams show this week.
She's that horrible woman.
Who's Wendy Williams? Sia would slap you about the face.
It took me a moment, but she's horrible. She's got mental issues.
Yeah, she's not stable, but then again...
And I can say that because I have them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do actually have them. But Sia's also really on the edge of a lot of things, so I think that's perfect audience, really.
Mm.
Anyway, so he's been doing that. He's been posing in Times Square. Sia's been doing Sia. Huh? That's the thing about Sia. He will always be himself.
Yeah.
Which is exactly how we like him. Just going to click over to the Skype here. Googie's on Skype, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, that's how we do the show.
Scop.
Scop.
Scop, Bruce. Scop.
Scop.
Sia, are you there, Bruce?
Good morning.
Hola.
Yay.
I felt like a Jedi getting this line on here. Hey, Sia, how's it going?
Well, I'm awesome, thank you. How are you guys doing?
So good. So, yeah, we're present. We're bushy-tailed, bright-eyed.
What time are you?
I am 6 hours behind, so it's a little after midnight right now.
Yeah, so we're in the same day.
Well, I haven't really slept yet, so still need to.
Are you under the influence?
No, not at all. I need to get my Wednesday out of it. It feels... this conversation is just going to be a little nauseating and eye-rolling for the next couple of minutes. But it feels a little sad that I have my last full day in New York coming up because I fly out mid-morning on Friday. But this has been, like, insane. Absolutely insane.
Oh, I can imagine.
So you got there before Gareth did, right? So what have you been doing? I know you guys have actual work things and you're going to these things about podcasting and conferencing, which we'll hear about next week. But then on your downtime, have you been hanging out with Cliff or is he just a little bit too highbrow in the Hamptons for you? How's it working?
So just to break everything down a bit more, I landed in the States last Friday morning and landed in Washington, D.C. And remember Debbie, who we always check up with every now and then on the show?
Of course, she hates Trump, Debbie, yeah.
Yeah, I finally took her up on her offer. She always says that we should come and visit her. So I said, screw it. Of course, sure. I'll be in your side of the world. So let's do that.
Oh, nice.
So I stayed with Debbie and her family for the weekend. She took me around D.C. We had tons of food. We saw all of the typical touristy things like the White House and the U.S. Capitol. And we visited a lot of museums. And then hopped onto a train on Sunday afternoon. It was a 3-hour ride to New York City. And so I've been in the city ever since then.
That's cool. She strikes me as someone that's like the perfect person to take you to a fresh city, though, because she's knowledgeable, she's enthusiastic and friendly, and very considerate as well.
And she's also Debbie. Like, it is not like, you know, going to a random Joe Sobe who might not have stories to tell or who might not be up for a good time. This is me, full disclosure, and you'll hear more of it definitely next week when I'm back on the show. But just getting started, she picked me up at the airport, and I'm so grateful. I wasn't feeling sluggish. I haven't had any jet lag, so I was able to get the day started as soon as I landed. And Debbie was like, let's go. Like, we need to hit all of these sites. You need to see everything. So we were zipping around the city. And within my first, I'll say, 3 hours there, we got involved in a fender bender.
Who was driving?
Why were you driving?
Yeah, exactly.
It was not me, let me put it that way. But what says welcome to America, and then like getting into a car accident. We were parked on the side of the road, and we were now pulling out into the lane. And this car just seemed like it came out of nowhere, drove into the side of us. I started talking to Jesus and the 12 disciples, going, well, if this is my time to die, what a fabulous way to die.
Oh,
but also, you know, what is going to happen to my body? I'm in a foreign land.
Was the person angry? Did they get out and have a bit of a fisticuff?
It was surprisingly dealt with very, very quickly. And thankfully, no one was harmed. It was the guy in the other car who was okay. And it was myself, Debbie, and Debbie's husband in our car. We were all fine as well. Within a matter of minutes, we were back on the road again. We jumped onto a tour bus after that. And so we're driving around the city. And let me just tell you, like, you know, I'm used to driving on what we call our side of the road in South Africa. Mm. So now it's after the accident and getting into buses and cars again, it's like, wait, what's happening? And we're driving on the wrong side. And why does it seem like every car is trying to drive into us
like
at this point?
Typical steer panic.
Look, it was heightened after the accident, okay? So I'm not too crazy. And then Debbie was really trying to get me to enjoy the city as much as possible, because later that night as well, after a lot of sightseeing, she took me to a couple of bars, and she even signed me up to a gay bar. And I thought, Debbie, this is not going to end well. This is not going to end well. Are you guys ready for this? Because it's really juicy.
What do you mean signed you up to a gay bar?
Don't you just walk in?
Don't gays just have free movements here? Or do you have to, like, register? Hi, I would like a gay night out, please.
She hoyed me in there. So we actually ended up going to two different gay bars. So the first was...
Twice.
Yeah, twice in one night. It was a little weird, but I'm not complaining too much. So the first experience was odd because she was telling me to, like, oh, don't you think this guy is cute? Don't you think he's cute? You need to go and talk to him. And I said, Debbie, with all due respect, this is not going to work, because it now seems like I'm that guy who goes up partying with their mother, you know?
Yeah, and also she's like watching your every move and expecting you to do stuff.
Yes.
No, and that's like, just weird.
Debbie, there's also this weird, you know, the gays are like the wild. So you can't throw me, this young, fresh piece of meat, into a pack of, you know, wild beasts. It's not going to end well. So, you know, I'm a young, fresh,
What's the gay stock like there?
No, the gay stock.
It's not as juicy as here, clearly.
It is everything and anything you want. I could basically just get married here. That's what I've realized. So that was the first gay bar we went in. We just were very civilized with things, and we had a drink, and I was minding the number of drinks I was having. I thought, I don't want to be a mess on the other side of the world. Then she took me to another gay bar, which I heard there, and mind you, and it's very obvious, Washington, D.C. is a very, you know, political city. There are a lot of high power profile and powerful people who work and live in the city. So the second gay bar that we went to is exactly what I always look out for, you know?
Yeah.
in a future husband, you know, someone who has their things together. Oh, yes.
Like a clever, wealthy person.
Mm-hmm. So we get to this place. We're sitting at the bar and start having these two random guys come over to us and they started chatting me up. I thought, well, this is what I was after. And it turns out one of them gets, like, folks, like, sit down, hold on to yourselves, get ready.
Yeah.
So the one guy is a fundraiser on the team that works with Malala Yousafzai.
Okay.
She's the Nobel Prize winner, the 16-year-old girl who got shot by the Taliban because she was fighting for education. I'm like, this is the man I need in my life. He goes out, he saves the world with Malala. I'll be at home with the dogs. This is a win-win situation. Needless to say, we swapped numbers. We're still chatting. Oh. So who knows? You guys.
Nice, yeah.
Wow, Sia.
Go get it,
girl. Full freaking disclosure now.
That's amazing.
Sia, I think wedding invitations will be coming out soon.
And the age gap?
He is 27. Okay. Yeah, he was born.
So he's a young maverick.
This is right up my alley. I'm not complaining.
All right. Well,
very good. See,
that's exactly what we want from people who travel on the show, to give stories like that. This is the essence of travel. I'm so glad we finally got someone to do this.
I had two things. I can definitely tell you about the great meetings that we've been having. We're also in New York City to attend a conference called the NAB show, the National Association for Broadcasting. We met up with Jen Sue here. We've been networking a lot. But I thought there's all of that, which will come out over time as well with some deals that we're working on. Or I can just give you some real saucy, juicy stuff that is better to talk about now.
Yeah, spot on. I think you're leaving people hanging for next week, where you guys can obviously give everyone a proper catch up. But that's really great that Debbie's actually a really fantastic wingman for gay people.
There you go.
I mean, there we thought, you know, we thought we had Debbie sussed. I mean, here's another string in her bow.
Look, and then coming over to New York City, it is everything that I think anyone who hasn't been to the city yet imagines it will be, but then it also surpasses all of your expectations. Mm-hmm. Everything that you've seen in movies, everything that you've heard, you know, the city's so fast-paced, you know, people are always moving quickly.
I don't know if it's a good place for an anxious person. I live vicariously through my cousin who's been there, and she's the same as me, where we you know, stranger danger and avoid crowds, and she said she couldn't handle it.
Leanne, this is coming from me, who's Deputy Piglet. Once you've survived Johannesburg, you know how to navigate New York City as well.
Okay.
You know, when someone walks up a little too close to you, the Joe Burger in me is ready to, like, push someone out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, when there's a fight breaking out, you know, just to move very swiftly past that and to get upon your merry way.
And not
wherever
to take
you're
off
going.
Your watch and join in.
Yeah. Don't get involved.
Hold my watch, Coach. Hold my watch.
Yeah.
I'm not at all getting involved in things like that. But also what was jarring for me was the harsh reminder that it's actually also a city at the end of the day. So, you know, it seems like such a weird thing to bring up. You know how in footage of New York City, you'll see like the smoke coming out from the gutters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was just for movies, but it's actually what happens.
It really happens. Yeah. And it's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
I know.
What smoke is that?
It's smoke coming from the literal gutters and also the subway underneath the street.
Mm. I've seen so it, but what is it actually?
Well, it's not smoke as such.
It's
steam. Nothing's being burnt.
That's
steam.
All
yeah.
It is. It's steam. It's hot. It makes you feel sticky. It smells revolting. Yeah. And you think about how many people live and work in the city. There is so much rubbish here. I was like, this is also not really the most Instagrammable thing I was.
So little us doing, you know, our glass and aluminium straws here aren't really doing much. when New York
the city
and
is
doing
a lot. Yeah, the city is doing a lot to push for recycling, and I'm not calling it dirty per se, but it's just also very grimy. That was just a snap into reality that I had to figure out. But you know, the New York is divided, well, especially the island of Manhattan is divided into avenues and streets, and all of those are based on a number system. So that is why actually I met up with our team, which, you know, Gareth, on Sunday afternoon, and they were able to let me go, and I spent 2 days on my own accord because I could navigate the city. The city is very easy to move around, and once you know that, okay, this building is on the corner of 8th Avenue and 48th Street, all you have to do is just count the number of streets or avenues you're walking down, and you'll find your way there. So that's why I was able to disappear for a little while.
Nice, yeah. So today's your last full day. What do you got planned for today?
Yeah, last full day. I am off to the conference this morning. We have a couple of sessions that we're sitting in on. And I also have two of my friends that I'll be seeing for the last time. And also just for the typical touristy thing, I'll be going to the 9/11 memorial and taking a little ferry ride around the Statue of Liberty. So squeezing as much as I can.
Speaking of squeezing as much as you can, and Mr. Man from the bar, you're going to have a swan song with him.
Ben, I don't know. We just let it be what it will be. He also, this is so disgusting and like disgustingly corny, he volunteers a lot. He's involved in a lot of outreach programs, so he travels to Africa a lot.
So, you know, he's going to come and outreach to you.
He can reach out to me and won't complain. Anyway, I'll keep quiet now.
All right, Sarah, well, thanks for catching up with us. Thanks for taking the time out of your long day to be
here. You guys are absolute rock stars. I can't wait to be back on the show and to be able to keep up with all of you. What a big week in terms of stories happening in South Africa, you know, in terms of...
Yeah, it's all happening.
Yikes.
Yeah, we'll get into those now.
And sports.
Okay,
and of course,
I saw some Casus Mania things, but I mean, Nicholas, the dross rapist, testifying in court. We're able to hear him tell his side of the story for the first time. I've been weirdly obsessed with that. On a random note, the SABC is suffering even more. I saw that last night they announced that they're cancelling top billing after 23 years.
Oh, no.
How will we ever know
how the rich live?
Am I breaking news here about the best of the good life?
How are we going to feel so terrible about our own lives?
God, that's such... But hang on a second. Like, if you lose top billing, then what do you have?
That's worth watching.
What's
on
Genie
that channel.
D going to do?
No, this is exactly my point, sir. Who are these people going to get falsely excited about now?
Yeah, it's just speaks you know of what? Everything being okay, in so, shambles at the so SABC.
I know after tomorrow I leave the show again, but you guys need to do a top billing like tribute show. As in, get like whoever you can in here and just do a proper top billing tribute because it's given so much. It was like... It was up there with Carte Blanche in my eyes as a show that you didn't really want to watch, but it was all that was there in the early days.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's perfect timing, though. We have Bastana Khumalo, who's just written her autobiography, coming in next Tuesday. And she is one of the co-producers of Top Billing, so maybe she'll have something to say about it.
I'm going to go with no, but I mean, get your Unez in here. Unez was great when he was speaking about how, was it Patience Stevens is a crook, and he was like...
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything more on that.
Okay. Well, Sarah, we'll let you go because we need to crack on as well. But thanks
good
for joining
to hear
us
you haven't lost your South African accent yet.
And always keep it safe, Sarah.
What are you talking about? We're walking here. I'm in New York.
Did you hear what Ben said, Sarah?
No, he was too busy trying to do a bad accent. All right, Sarah, have a great time. Have a great last day. Fading you out. Fading you out slowly. Ciao, ciao, ciao. Before we get into the five things we need to know, because as Sarah pointed out, there are a plethora, a whole host of a stories. A shit ton, Leanne. Yes, there we go. You're into metrics. Did you hear about this family or these groups of people in the Netherlands who have been living in a basement because apparently the world ended?
What?
Yeah. Real story, okay? So, seven people...
Are they family members?
Have you guys seen Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yes.
Okay, no. So imagine,
well, she's in a bunker.
Yes, because some guy said basically the world's coming to, and we all have to go under a bunker.
Yes.
So some dude in the Netherlands
convinced
six other people, young people, between the age of 18 and 25, to literally go into the cellar of this place in like rural Netherlands.
He must have watched the show, right?
But Leanne, they didn't know there were any other people on this earth. The one dude escaped. This is happening.
How
right
long have they been there for?
So how long have they been there for? What's forever?
Well, for a very long time. Because okay, this is the shit thing about the story. This 50-year-old grumpy old geezer who basically coerced them all down there and seems to be the ringleader of this. He's been said to be very uncooperative, so he's not telling authorities anything, right? So he basically he holds them out in this basement, and the staircase up to the real world is being concealed by this huge cabinet. Like, you can't make this up, but it's a real story. So then this one dude, who they're not sure if it is the son or something like that. These people obviously are very simple. One dude broke out, and he was walking the streets, and he went to a pub. And he was like,
what are you guys doing here?
What's going on here? Who are you guys? Why are you here? and he was like really in bad shape, and he had a horrible beard and terrible dirty hair. So the police were called. And can you imagine being the police in a rural Dutch town where nothing happens?
Yeah.
Other than someone's cheese goes off and they have a spat, perhaps.
Yeah.
And now there's a dude who doesn't know that the world hasn't ended in this pub.
No, I can't believe
it. So then they go back to the house and they discover everyone in the basement, and these people have no idea that there's outside world. There's an outside world out there.
I wonder how they've been surviving. What have they been eating?
Canned food and urine, I would guess. But I mean, it's just...
Yes.
It's such an incredible story, but this dude has been so uncooperative. He's not telling anybody about what's going on. No one really knows the relation of all the people. Obviously, there's a family dynamic there. There's said to be the mother. Obviously, okay, so this guy is a dad, but it's not unknown if these are all his kids or other people. Mm-hmm. But the mother is believed to be dead, and she is believed to be being buried on the property. Who knows? But there is one hell of a story.
So I wonder if he just disappears every now and then and goes and lives in the real world while the rest is still holed up.
But it's like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, that show. But here it is.
That is amazing.
So the farm had a huge vegetable garden and many sheds, but was described as rather messy according to newspapers in the area. The family was completely self-sufficient, living off the vegetable garden and a goat.
Oh my God, this poor goat.
So he was probably coming out and farming and getting all the veggies and going back down.
Probably.
The old man. Convincing everyone else that.
Look, there's a couple of aerial shots of the place. It does look like a farm, but I mean, this goat.
That poor goat. That's who I feel most sorry for.
I'd like to think that the goat was just milked. And they weren't living.
Hopefully.
What's happening this Friday? Well, the goat's coming down.
Oh no. Oh no.
Right, into the five things we need to know, which Leanne is armed with right now. And there are some sad stories, some big stories, and some stories that you just can't miss. So therefore, we're going to give them all to you right now, Leanne Mon.
We start off with the dross rapist.
Can I just say,
yeah,
I feel sorry for the dross.
Well,
I mean, the dross?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say for him.
No. I mean, we'll get to the bigger thing. The only person you feel sorry for here is obviously the victim. But the dross never said, come in for our rape burger. They never advertised to lure rapists to their place.
No, they didn't.
So, but they keep getting their name in this horrible case, the dross rapist.
Yeah, it's a PR nightmare for them.
I know they had that terrible ad campaign a while ago where they go, let's get bossed down at the dross.
Yeah.
But they never actually condone rape. They never encourage rape. Leave the dross alone, people. You can still go there for
We don't know what else to call him.
You can't just call him the rapist. His name is so many of them,
Nicholas
Nino.
But the crime is so dreadful, his name is known now, so we can just drop the dross.
And attach it to him.
So, convicted rapist, Nicholas Nino,
there we go,
testified yesterday in mitigation of sentence. This is where I was a little surprised when you said you felt sorry for him because...
Oh, no, never.
I don't know. Listen to this. He broke down as he explained events leading up to him raping a 7-year-old girl. He assaulted her in the bathroom. That was a year ago. He said, it's difficult for me to describe what happened at that moment. It's something that breaks me every day. It's something that I have to live with every day. It's something I can't take back. He told the court he feels angry and hopeless and said even prison inmates and guards look down on him. His grandmother then took the stand, offering an emotional apology to the family of his victim. Her name's Pauline Gerke. She said that she knows that her grandson is sorry for raping the 7-year-old girl. A clinical psychologist has testified that Nino was an angry, frustrated kid, given to bursts of rage and self-harm. She said that Nino was severely abused as a child.
All facts, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what separates us from people who can live on this earth and people that have no place in society, unfortunately. It's a tough game, I know. And as I've said in the show from day one, when crimes are committed, bring the parents in. This mother apparently gave him drugs from a very young age. The mother's 37, okay?
Mm.
This guy's what? Late
20-something?
Yeah.
Mid-20s. So clearly, interesting dynamic there that there's not a big age gap between the two of them.
Yeah.
He often referred to his mother as a brother-sister kind of relationship.
Yeah.
So yeah, hugely scarred. Okay.
Oh, goodness.
But if you're a mess, maybe don't hang out where things can happen like this. There's also that. I mean, I know we should live in a culture and a society where we can forgive and we can understand and be compassionate and stuff. But this young girl, the 7-year-old's life is kind of ruined. There isn't amount of therapy in this world. There's not amount of denial or, I don't know,
exactly what he said.
But like
take these words and put them in her mouth, in the victim's mouth. It's something that breaks me every day. It's something that I have to live with every day. It's something I can't take back. She's dealing with the same thing. Look, I'd be a horrible judge because I feel sympathetic to everyone in the situation.
I just feel like this is similar to the Oscar whole story, and you know, him feeling bad and oh, I did something terrible. I feel so bad. I can't sleep at night. But you did it.
Yeah.
But what are we supposed to do about that?
It's not going to unmurder Reva.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to unrape this girl.
You did it, not us.
Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
Ben, what's going on?
Okay, he's crying. He's composing his words.
The Lord, the accused indicated that if he gets emotional, he'd rather push through than to ask for adjournment or anything.
Yeah, let me inquire for you. Are you in a position you can proceed, sir?
I'm fine, sir.
Are you fine?
Yeah.
Yes, proceed.
She may never forgive, never forget the pain I would leave. Forever regret. Should awaken once again from the same bad dream, barely even then, tears flowing like a stream.
Okay, well, let's not go into it because, I mean, if you read the stuff, you'll see the big quotes come up. But he wrote a poem, which he then read out.
A poem.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like.
Oh,
See, like Leanne.
Heartbreaks.
You can't be a judge, Leanne.
No, I couldn't.
Because you'd probably let him go.
Probably go. You've had a tough life and that kind of stuff. But. We've just got to be better as humans. I don't mean to sound crass, clinical, like emotionless, but we just need to be better as humans. We've become so obsessed with our own excuses in life. Mm-hmm. You can't rape young children. You can't rape anybody. Let's just not do it. And if you have an abusive mother and these kind of things, sure.
Then get therapy.
All my sympathy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have our own crosses to bear and difficult backgrounds, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he needs to do time and he needs to serve as an example, obviously. How much time?
You get one shot at this thing called
life. He sounds like he's already reformed.
Yeah. Give him,
I don't know.
Give this guy 4 Bidalbranian Cokes the Dross and maybe a little bit of ketamine, and I don't think we'll see reform. I think there's something desperately wrong with the guy. And again, it's like, we can't just think that excuses are why we do things in life. We've got to be accountable.
Yep.
Every one of us.
Let's move on to story number 2.
Good point, Leanne.
How was everybody's day yesterday in terms of electricity?
Shit.
Load effing shedding. Luckily, I wasn't home, but I heard about it.
Man, it happened so quickly.
Uh-huh.
I got a news flash in the morning. There's going to be stage 2 load shedding. And already suburbs were out. I actually was load shat for about 20 minutes.
Wait,
and that
did
was
you
all.
Say load shat?
Yeah.
Okay. That is the term. If you go to Eskom's app, Eskom's a puss.
Yes.
They say you're getting load shat today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so South Africans are obviously very frustrated over this new load shedding session.
Mm-hmm.
a number of Eskom generating units broke down, highlighting the challenge facing the president in rescuing the state power firm. Eskom said it would cut 2,000 megawatts of power until 11 p.m. on a rotational basis across the country. This is the first power cut in around 7 months. Joburgers were very, very angry. We make money out of this business through electricity. If it's not there, we're going down, etc. Huge inconveniences caused to businesses, etc. So,
yep.
Is what it is, you
Lights
know.
Lights are out, the traffic is going. Interesting enough, I saw two guys. They were not those points people.
Yeah.
They were just two dudes.
Yeah.
Who I'm almost certain the guys who pull those recycling trailer things around.
Mm.
They found high-vis kind of vests. And they were dictating traffic in Bryanston.
Dictating traffic.
Wow.
Good
and
on
was
them.
It working?
It was less than, it was not as terrible as the other intersections I was going in. Good for them.
I feel like there was load shedding this morning. I mean, I came through Rivonia.
Oh, there will be. There is.
And
there
all the traffic lights were off.
Yeah.
That leads us to story number three. Eskom confirms stage two load shedding for Thursday.
Well, thanks, Eskom.
Did you see...
feel happy.
From 9 excuse me, I get very emotional. 9 a.m. to 11 p.m.
So, and then ENCA yesterday, they tried to speak to the COO of Eskom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And his line was so bad, the first time they spoke, it cut out. The second time they're going through, and it sounded like this guy was like in a toilet underground with those people in Holland. And then like it just died, and they were like, hello, hello, hello?
Hmm.
Okay, well, some units already started breaking down on Saturday. There have been things like boiler tube leaks. A main conveyor belt transporting coal to Medupi Power Station is broken down.
Yeah, I can tell you what it was. It's just confirmation of piss-poor maintenance and terrible leadership.
And also there aren't elections coming up, so let's just pull out the rolling blackouts.
Listen here, you dickbags.
It could last for a week.
If I miss anything of where I want to watch Japan versus SA of the weekend...
Oh.
Well, what am I going to do? Set fire to the building. Like, what can you do? You get this load, you get load shat, and you stand there, like, after a bird poos on you. What are you going to do? Fly up and get the bird?
No, you can't.
It's a terrible, helpless feeling. You just get so angry. But it's the world to be living.
And at least we're not in Zimbabwe. The price of bread shot up 60% overnight.
What a shithole in Zimbabwe. That place is.
What?
Do we have an actual price for that damn thing?
A loaf of bread soared to 15 Zimbabwe dollars. That's around $1. So what's the exchange rate?
I mean, it's not hugely expensive. You know, yeah. Like a loaf of bread here is like...
So it rose to 15 Zim dollars from $9 the previous day. So I mean, come on, guys.
So they were getting cheap bread.
Yeah, they were getting cheap bread. They're on par now.
Yeah, but still, I mean, like, it's just... This country is just doomed. It's story after story after story. Doesn't also help there's been a major drought and they've got nothing, basically.
It's the second most important staple in the country after a thick cornmeal porridge known in the local Shona language as sadza.
Hmm.
And that's all you got to look forward to when it comes to eating.
Bread and sadza.
Poor place.
Don't trust the politicians, kids.
Apparently, bakers said they were forced to hike their prices due to rising production costs. Electricity prices there have gone up significantly as well. The price of fuel has been going up weekly. I mean, you have to check every morning. We were speaking to our friend in Zim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's not in Zim. He's staying in Zambia at the moment.
Awesome.
But he said he has to check every morning what the petrol price is before he puts petrol in.
We can't live like that. We can't live like that. These people who run things, they can't keep doing this to people. There's more of us and less of them.
Electricity is only available for around 6 hours a day.
Man, it's so sad. How do people live like that? It's just uncertainty all the way.
And then...
It becomes a new norm,
I guess.
And
then these people come to South Africa and South Africans beat them to shit.
Yeah,
well, that's a different kind of conversation.
It
would be nice. It would be nice for Zimbabweans to be in Zimbabwe, be the best they can be as Zimbabweans. Not that I'm saying that they're not welcome here. It's just that because I believe that everyone can make a country great. It's just that why must they have to have South Africa? I'm pretty sure they'd like to be in Zimbabwe.
The hike in in electricity, in August, it went up by 400%.
Sure.
Okay.
That's quite a lot.
Fuel price rose more than 25%. The official inflation rate is 290%. but economists estimate that it's at least double that figure. Okay, story number five. The case against a Durban businessman arrested in connection with the Verulam mosque attack has been postponed to the 31st of this month. Farhad Humer appeared in the Verulam Magistrates Court yesterday. He's believed to be the mastermind behind a spate of bomb attacks in and around Durban. He was arrested with 11 others in September 2018. The group was also involved in the attack at the Imam Hussein Mosque in May last year. The NPA's Natasha Kara said that the remaining suspects were expected to appear in court on the 13th of December for further investigation. So we'll keep tabs on that.
Leanne, I got to say, you do news well.
Well, you know, Ben, I was a newsreader.
Well, there it is.
Very little known fact.
There it is. You do news very well, Leanne. That's why you are today's five things we need to know, reader.
Can we have some sporto from you now?
You bet. You bet. Of course, as I said in my little ESCOM rant there, it is the big weekend for World Cup quarterfinals of the rugby. There's no typhoons.
Who's who? Who's who in the zoo?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Leanne. Because there are, Google, how many teams?
There must be eight.
I don't know, Ben.
Oh, Leanne's right. Leanne, as really? You know, has a penchant for sport, which she's shown this week in a huge way. So there'll be four matches, quarterfinals, eight teams, which then gets whittled down to the semis and the finals. So basically the next 3 weekends of your life are big rugby weekends where we get the ultimate champion. And it better not be New Zealand. And here are the teams that are going to make sure it doesn't happen. England versus Australia, 9:15 Saturday morning.
Who do we want to win?
Well, this is a tough one because essentially this clash, now you'll be able to read technical reviews all over the place about forward battles, that kind of stuff. I'm going to give you the big attractions if you're not that big of a fan. This clash is interesting because obviously England versus Australia, okay, that's the old,
it's huge.
It's the old foes, that kind of stuff. Obviously in cricket, this is the biggest rivalry, it's the Ashes. In rugby, it's not so much that because in Australia land, rugby union is like the 15th best sport. I mean, it's behind wearing small shorts and beating your wife. It really isn't one of the biggest sports there. So the Australians have a motley crew, literally, of people. They really look dirty. I mean, like they look like rough sailors, basically, and they've incorporated a bunch of South Sea Islanders for a bit of muscle. England, on the other hand, they are full United Nations, of course. They are people from around the world. So you get some very ragtag-looking people that come into this. But the big story is Eddie Jones, the Aussie who runs the English team, and Michael Checker, the Rottweiler, who runs the Australian team. Mm. Both of these guys are press conference gold. Michael Checker has no filter. He's also a bloke's bloke. He's rougher than a goat's knee. Eddie Jones is the old cunning guy who will, you know, throw little jabs here and there. And he's also just very kind of aloof and sarcastic. So they're going to be jibing each other. The referees are going to no doubt decide this one because there are three Frenchies on the field. The referee, the two linesmen, touch judges, referee assistant, call it what you want. And the French, when it comes to refereeing, sacre bleu. These guys are shite.
Yeah.
So if you are playing Super Brew, toss a coin on this one. England are the better team. I will note, there's no doubt they're the better team. But these French refs, it's like they're thinking French, but they're watching something else. They just have no composure. Their idea of rules is sketchy at best. So this game is going to be so entertaining. It's going to be huge, controversial.
There's going to be lots of angry people in the crowd.
It's going to be lots. And even though the bookies will probably triple your money if Australia does win this one. No, England should win this game. And they've got a better team. They've got better structure. And they've got better composure where it really matters in the key positions. But the French refs are going to make this thing like a game of craps. You roll those dice and see what happens after it.
Dear.
So then after that, there's New Zealand versus Ireland in Tokyo at 12:15. So obviously New Zealand are the darlings of world rugby because they do that stupid song and dance in the beginning. And of course, they're also very good. Can't ever discredit that. Ireland, well, they've been up and down. And I know that they lost to Japan early in the tournament, but they did so without Johnny Sexton. So they need to rest him. New Zealand, being the cheats that they are, they'll try rough Johnny up all over the place. To which refs will probably turn a blind eye like they have for the last 15 years when these thugs have tried these tactics. But if the loose forwards, like South African CJ Stunder, can maybe thwart the malicious intent of the Kiwis, Johnny might have a good game and Ireland could actually win. So this one, I think, is a bit more even than we expect because the last couple of years, New Zealand have been showing that they're not completely impossible to beat. And Ireland have beaten them a few times. They've probably been, along with SA, the most prolific or most successful against the All Blacks. So this game, again, it's going to be so interesting. And with it being quarterfinals, you get a lot more jittery sort of play. Now, New Zealand are all flash and dash and all that kind of stuff. But when they get tested against a strong team like Ireland are, And Ireland got so much to prove. Of course, they lost to Japan. That was a big shock to them. Oh, this game's going to be good. And those are just the first two games. Then we got on the Sunday, we got Wales versus France. Now, France are crap. They are to playing right now what their refs are to officiating. Mm-hmm. So you can't in any way see this happening. You know, people always say, but you never know with the French, because that's just an age-old cliche. And of course, you never know with the French. But I think when it comes to playing rugby, which is a practiced, rehearsed, a professional thing that you do, you kind of know they're not going to be as good as Wales. Wales have been solid. A couple of aging players in key positions. But this is a team that was ranked world number one recently. They've got a fantastic record against pretty much everybody, especially SA of recent years. So I would definitely say this game will maybe be the most predictable. Wales will be just too good. Too clinical, too composed, and also just completely un-French. So that's 9:15 Sunday, which then leads you in. So the cool thing is on Sunday, maybe go a bit softer on Saturday. Uh-huh. Start with the beers pretty early. Wales, France, get a couple in, because 12:15 is Japan versus SA in Tokyo, so in the big stadium. And yes.
Surely we, I mean, they're the hosts, and it'll be really sad for them to lose.
Of course it will.
But we are going to beat them, right? Yes,
correctly, and well spotted. Now, the Brave Blossoms, sure, they're brave as hell. And they've got players running fantastic angles. They've imported some fantastic New Zealanders and a couple of other white guys that I forgot where they're from. And they've got Lapis Labaskakni. Now, Lapis Labaskakni.
Lapis.
If there's any kind of banter on an Afrikaans sense, Lapis is the spy. He'll decipher anything. And then retell the Japanese guys in broken English, which they don't understand. I don't think guys understand Lapis. But he's a big chunk of meat, so that's why he's in the team. So,
we have to remember that moment during one of the World Cups where there was an Irish ref and he was shouting the odds at the South African team. They were about to scrum. And he said,
speaking Irish, yeah.
And the one of the bookers said, sorry?
It was probably Bucky's. So, look, Japan are an exciting, dynamic, fantastic team. But as the box showed pre-tournament, as I've mentioned before, you can kick the crap out of them quite literally. Just play tight. Play a very kind of play a game to your strengths, one of them being just your strength. They are stronger and more physical than the Japanese team, are the box, and they can definitely slow these guys down. Obviously, on broken ball, turnovers, the counterattack, all that kind of stuff, Japan have lots of speed. They have huge amounts of fitness. They've been said to be the fittest team in the World Cup, which is one of those like secondhand comments, because fitness doesn't always win you something. It's great to have, but also your professional sports star, fitness should be like your first tick.
Cool.
But yeah, it's quite hard being fit when you've got to try ruck and maul eight burly men all the time. I mean, like in MMA, you get guys who are fantastic strikers, amazing athletes, until you get some grizzly dude who's going to grapple with them for like a minute, then they're screwed. So there's different strengths, there's different fitnesses. The Boks are more all-around team. And I know in the last World Cup, they lost 34-32 to Brighton. And everyone will say, well, you can't underestimate Japan like we did last time. Sure. But professional sport. Rusty Erasmus is a professional leader. He's done all his sort of research. And I think there's a lot more gears to this team that we might give him credit for, because Rusty's been planning this for a long time. He took SA Rugby by the balls. He had all the control. And with that, I think he's going to squeeze a good tune out of this team. So that's your World Cup quarterfinals for this
Very
weekend.
Very exciting.
How bloody exciting. So 12:15. And if anyone's got some suggestions, I'm seeing some friends I haven't seen in a while looking for an intimate yet fun place to watch the rugby in Johannesburg. Please do let me know at Follow the Bounce on Twitter.
Just check the load shedding schedule, Ben, and then just move from there. Decide from there where you go. I think that's a safe way to
like my local bar's got a generator.
Okay, that's good.
I don't always want to go there. I want to maybe shake it up a bit. But anyway, if you've got any suggestions, please let me know on Twitter.
Well, once it's been known, it's no longer going to be intimate.
Of course it will be. Because someone will say, you know, a girl's place, you know, obviously in the greater Sandton surrounds, I'm not driving to Edenvale or something like that. The 100, which is what England's attempt to revive cricket for the youth and all this kind of shit. Mm-hmm. That old chestnut. We need new audiences. We need to get a new generation of cricket. The 100's their answer, basically. You've guessed it. They play 100 balls in innings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And the cool thing is that then SA players get to earn points by going there and playing. So Kakisa Rabada is the SA's highest reserve player. He's looking – this is really quite interesting, because when the IPL do their human traffic – sorry, their recruitment trade, they bid on the guys – and then if nobody cares, then they just kind of skip them on. Like Herschel Gibbs used to get lots of money. Mm-hmm. He then wrote a – tell-all book where he told all but also then retracted at the same time. It was very, very strange. India didn't like the fact that he was sharing secrets and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he went for squad zero nothing in the IPL. They just pushed him off. But in this 100, it seems like our players have reserves. As in, like, I will play if I get this much money. So Rabada is on a reserve of 2.39 million rand.
Jeez.
Quinton de Kock is on a 1.9 million rand, as is Faf du Plessis. Temba Bavuma, kind of say this is a bit cheeky with him saying he's 1.4 million.
And is this for one game?
No, it's for this thing. The tournament.
For the tournament, okay.
It's not overly long. Okay. Timber Vuma, look, I think he should be in limited overs cricket, but I don't think he's got the same pedigree as someone like Dale Steyn, David Miller, Chris Morris, Simran Tahir. All guys, he's asking for a higher reserve. Look, I don't know if he's asking for it, agents.
Yeah, I mean, whoever. Who decides?
But I think Chris Morris asking for 1.1 is quite affordable. Dale Steyn, he obviously was retired from Test cricket, but he's on a reserve of 1.4, as is David Miller and JP Duminy. Aidan Markram's on a reserve of 767,175 rand. So this will
Seeing it on paper must be weird for them, seeing how they're valued.
Well, it's professional sport. So this draft will take place Sunday at 8 o'clock, if you do care. That's a big part of the story, if you do care. But, of course, the Proteas are getting absolutely trousered right now in India, which isn't going to really help their stocks. But this is the thing about when you have a T20 or a progressive limited overs tournament, you've got to have ridiculous team names. This is the law.
Yeah,
it's the law. When you propose these things, first thing is, what are your stupid team names? To which they go, I'm glad you asked. Here they are.
The Dancing Dolphins.
The Trent Rockets. Okay, of course, this is England, right? Bear in mind, English. The Trent Rockets. Southern Brave, Northern Superchargers, Welsh Fire. How did you not say Welsh Rare Bits? You people are stupid. Oval Invincibles.
Oh, no.
Manchester Originals, London Spirit, and London Birmingham Spirit. Phoenix.
Oh, so awkward.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
What would you call one of the teams if you had to?
Trent Trousers, straight up. Guys playing tweed. Southern Brave. What is Southern Brave? Southern Ciders? Because it's a big deal in the South. Northern Superchargers? That just sounds stupid.
Yeah, it does.
Welsh Fire. I mean, that's just stupid. Oval Invincibles. Yeah, I could almost kind of go for that if they're playing at the Oval. Manchester Originals. Terrible idea. London Spirit. That sounds like a horse. And that's for the Birmingham Phoenix. Good luck, the 100. Good luck, the 100.
Oh, dear.
They've got money, Leanne, so it'll happen.
Yeah.
You know what doesn't have a lot of money? Mzansi Super League does not have the money of the 100, so therefore they won't get the players, even though it'd probably be a superior tournament. Got to have the money. Brooks Koepka, who is the world number one, has been just great value in golf the last few years. He's a good-looking dude. He looks like he doesn't care about golf. His girlfriend's super hot, and he just makes bajillions. He's won like four majors in no time at all. And people asked him yesterday in one of these big money European Tour events where the big players get lots of money just to go play and appear. They asked him about his rivalry with Rory McIlroy. As you know, Rory McIlroy is a really big deal in sport, in golf. He was a world number one. He was the Players Player of the Year this year. He won the FedEx, all that kind of stuff. Did he? Sure he did. Yeah, he won like $10 million. So they asked him about his rivalry with Rory McIlroy. So Brooks Koepka said, well, I've been on the PGA Tour for 5 years now, and Rory hasn't won one major, so it's not really a rivalry.
Ooh.
Drop patter. The golfing world is like, boom, that's the biggest boon. And that's what's so great. You've got to have these rivalries because golf is a personality sport, unlike sports, team sports.
Yeah.
So the fact that you got guys who are like subtly smack-talking each other like this is fantastic. Of course, Brooks Koepka is American. Rory McIlroy is Northern Irish. So when it comes to Ryder Cup time, boom, what a pairing that could be. Take that rivalry.
Sure.
So much. In sad boxing news, Patrick Day has passed on from his injuries, unfortunately. He was put into a coma after a Saturday fight where he was knocked out, unconscious. Sure. And unfortunately, he has passed away. Two other boxers have passed away this year as well. And it is just the age-old conversation. Should boxing be made safer? To which people say, well, everyone knows the risks when they go through it. And that's exactly what makes boxing boxing. It is not an easy sport. It is tough. It is hugely tough. And Day, who won 17 of his 22 fights, got knocked out in the 10th round of his super welterweight fight. But yeah, he's gone.
Imagine being the guy who delivered that blow.
Yeah,
that put him down.
That dude, he wrote a letter. sure. to the friends and family. It is rough. He said, look, obviously this was never an intention.
I mean, he killed him.
Basically killed him, yeah. Well, that's the thing is that the guy wasn't dead until he got hit by this dude.
Sure.
But yeah.
But how do you make it safer, Ben? I mean, boxing's about mooting each other.
Precisely, Gugu. Everyone gets into the sport knowing you can die.
Mm.
It's unfortunately how it happens.
Sure.
That just like in motorsport, just like in MMA.
It's like motorsport,
just
I suppose.
Just like in cricket with Phil Hughes. Got a ball to the back of the head, died.
Sure.
You can die in golf, for crying out loud.
You can die in golf. A woman in France went to go to the Ryder Cup last year. A stray drive hit her in the face, and she lost an eye.
Mm.
It was from Brooks Koepka.
So I suppose anything can take you. You just have to decide which you want to go for.
Yeah, and the final story, while we wrap up the hour here in the sport, is the cricketing world seems to have found some sense in a week where the 100 is being promoted. They are doing away with, I know this is just a couple of days old, the story, but we weren't here yesterday. They're doing away with the deciding World Cup games or ODI games on how many boundaries a team hits post a tied super over. Amazing revelation here. ICC statement said the change was in keeping with the basic principle of scoring more runs than the opponent to win. You don't say. Because you know, England, New Zealand in that World Cup, they drew the final. They drew after 50 overs each. After the super over, they were tied as well. But the English somehow won because they hit more boundaries during the match, which seems so trivial, so stupid, so anticlimactic. England went on to draw the World Cup. And with that, they became the greatest team in the history of cricket. But now, sanity has kind of come forward, and there we have it. So that is pretty much your sport. That is pretty much your news. We've had
very
a catch-up.
Very good, Ben. You're very good at the sport.
Thank you, Leanne.
Oh, you're just saying that, or what?
Yeah, because he gave me a news compliment.
No, but he does tell the sports in a...
Because I care.
In an interesting way.
It's because I care.
You tell stories, Ben.
I have so much to share. Ben, how do the semis shake up? The winners of which games play each other? So basically... Yeah. If SA wins, if Wales wins, it's SA versus Wales. If England wins, if New Zealand wins, it's New Zealand versus England. That is what people are expecting to come out of the semis. And the great
thing is, how do you see the finals playing out?
I think the world needs SA New Zealand as a final. It's been far too long. It's been, 95 was the last time. It needs to happen.
I'm scared.
Don't be. It's sport.
Yeah, New Zealand is...
There'll be another tournament in 4 years' time, Leanne.
It's power.
It's rough, though, to watch these things, man.
No, because when you win the World Cup, you want to win against the best. When SA won in 2007, they beat Argentina and England. Neither two great teams in the semi or the final. Sure, you've got to beat them because they've beaten someone else, and it's all on merit. But you want to kind of... You want to beat the All Blacks in the final. That's what every kid who plays rugby dreams of. Like, what would you want?
And do you think we could do it?
Yes, of course we can. As long as we get a ref who knows the rules of rugby.
Okay, you watch and then just tell me what happened.
Our guys can be composed and Fab de Klerk doesn't kick the ball away every 2 seconds. Yeah, that's my synopsis on all of that. Canton Pillar is here and he will be on the show for the next hour. So if you're listening by podcast,
very good.
All you need to do is listen to the next podcast from the 17th of October. If you're listening live, well, you can also get in touch with us 07974820.
And you can go for a poo while we play a song.
Oh, yeah, always fine. Dump. Having a poo in the morning is probably the best time to have a poo. Well, it's just as simple as that.
Oh, dear.
Because if you have one during the day, you've really got to structure it around meetings.
Yeah, you got to try public Skype lose, and all that stuff.
Fake like you on a phone call. And then you might have to do public lose. And we all know how that went for Gord.
Yeah, I know. Cliffcentral.com.